Just a few days ago, you might recall, turns off the mic to have a coughing fit, you might recall I was talking to Tanya Latty, the good doctor and entomologist at the University of Sydney, and she spent the last decade or so studying the behaviour of ant colonies, beehives and, most enchantingly, slime moulds, all of which, she argues, can make a great contribution to our infrastructure planning and indeed our social behaviour. Well, tonight we move from slime mould to algae. And sitting opposite me in the studio are Professor Peter Ralph, he's a professor of marine biology at UTS. He's exec director of the Climate Change Cluster in the Faculty of Science. And he founded the Deep Green Biotech Hub. And he leads research programs into algae biosystems and seagrass health. Sitting with him, Dr. Lucy Buxton. Lucy's a marine environmental scientist at UTS and industry engagement manager at the Climate Change Council. And she works with businesses to develop projects on algae. Peter, repeat that remarkable fact that you vouchsafed to me off air about oxygen.
So the breath of air that you've just taken, you can attribute that to the trees, and the next breath that you take can be attributed to the phytoplankton of the oceans. So 50% of the oxygen that we breathe comes from phytoplankton or algae.
Well, I've always been concerned about the deforestation, the massacre of the great jungles of the Amazon and so forth, and perhaps, you know, running out of oxygen. But as long as the algae are around, we're okay?
We're okay. We're okay, and they're doing a huge part in the carbon sequestration as well. So they give us the oxygen and they take the CO2 and sequester that.
I must say that most of the time when I think of algae, I'm not all that sort of fond of it. When I actually had a river at the farm, we used to have blooms on a regular basis. And when we had water in the dams, often they were quickly coated with a coating of these energetic little creatures. These days, I'd love to have a bloom or a coating, but we don't have any water. How did you get involved in this?
It was about 8 years ago. We had a new dean was appointed to the faculty, and he asked me what my opinion on biofuels was. And I said, I think there's a great challenge there and I'm not that interested in it. He said, well, the fact that you've got a strong opinion about it means that you're probably well positioned to actually solve the problem because you know what's wrong. And as a biochemist and a photobiologist, I knew what the limitations were. And I actually took his guidance and I used my skepticism and the reason why I knew it wouldn't work to actually start using that technology and the knowledge to address the problem.
They're closely related to seaweeds, aren't they? You've got microalgae.
Yes.
And macroalgae.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. So microalgae are single-celled organisms. Macroalgae are multi-celled organisms. But microalgae were the progenitor. They were the first photosynthetic organisms.
What about land plants?
Land plants came from microalgae. They were an endosymbiosis where a cell engulfed the microalgae and used it to become the chloroplast, the photosynthetic machine of the cell, whether it's a microalgae, a macroalgae, or a land plant.
Before the show, my producer showed me some extraordinary images of what you're up to. Just over the road, you've got your own crop of microalgae up on the roof of the UTS building.
Yes, yeah.
Big.
Yes. We have, this is part of the Deep Green Biotech Hub. What we want to do is to engage with industry. We want to demonstrate to them the technologies that they need to produce algae at an industrial scale. So we have pilot scale production facilities and the tubular bioreactor is one of those.
And Lucy, your role is to talk to industry, so you've got to speak fluent algae.
That's right. Well, the background in science does help, but this is an incredibly interesting kind of frontier of science, and algae-backed biotechnology offers incredible opportunities for solving some of the greatest problems of our time. We're looking at a 9 billion people on the planet by mid-century. We're going to have to produce 70% more food. We're going to have to do that with less land and using less water. And to be able to engage with a range of industries and business and the private sector in this space is incredibly exciting.
We know, Peter, that polyps, to mention another small creature, don't do too well with global warming. What about your creatures? Can they adapt?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've got between 70 to 300,000 species.
What?
Yes. Yes. There's massive, massive genetic diversity in the microalgae. And we just need to find extremophiles, ones that grow in extreme environments, and they're going to be the ones that will be well adapted to elevated temperature, elevated pH, alkaline lakes. So all of microalgae doesn't just grow in water. We have them growing on ice. We have them growing in soil. They move through the air.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that why I'm having different forms of hay fever?
That'll be other causes, but the microalgae certainly can move through the air.
Heavens above. Lucy, let's imagine that I'm not a geriatric broadcaster, but the vibrant young CEO of an enormous company. Why the hell should I be interested in what you guys are up to?
Well, I think that algae, the products that that algae are able to produce are offering some very exciting opportunities. So we've already touched on biofuels, but we're also looking at products that microalgae can produce, such as food products such as oil, protein, carbohydrates that can be either used on their own or put into production of food. They can be used in agricultural practices. We're also looking at extracting.
In what sense in agriculture? You mean as a fertilizer?
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of food for the animals. So we're looking at commonly terrestrial plants are grown to feed animals, right, which are then used for human consumption. And we think that algae, because of the way that we can grow them, they grow incredibly fast. They have a lower land footprint. We can grow them, as you said, on the roof of buildings. So they are able to offer an alternative, an exciting alternative.
Peter, can you accelerate the growth rate?
Yes, we can. We can genetically modify them, or we can select for the individuals that are better at growth rate or produce more oil, whichever trait we're interested in. UTS is about to build the world's first algal phenotyping facility. This will be a screening system that will put a lot of different types of algae in, and we'll work out which ones are the best, the Rambos. We'll select out the Rambos, and that'll be exactly what industry needs.
My wife did a PhD on biochar, which is, yes, as you know, a variation on the biofuel argument.
Yep.
How are your little critters used for energy production?
They can be used for biofuels, but I think in the energy sector, I think their greatest opportunity is in carbon sequestration and,
right,
stripping the CO2 out of flue gas. So I think this has been demonstrated in the past, and it's just a matter of, you want to grow your algae quicker, put them in flue gas. So the CO2 enhances their growth rate phenomenally.
Lucy, I understand that as a foodstuff, it's got a long history. There are tales of the Chinese eating nostoc in the Jin Dynasty, and I believe Aztecs also munched on algae.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the traditional uses of algae, particularly macroalgae, those seaweeds that you can harvest easily from coastal environments, go back thousands of years. As you pointed out, the Chinese and the Aztecs have we've got records of that. Likewise, today, in Japanese culture, over 50 species of algae are commonly eaten. And today, I mean, you think about where food technology is heading. The microalgae is already popping up commonly now. There's green smoothies, spirulina additives, and some of those other products that we were talking about earlier are being blended into
food. So they might be selling it downstairs in the coffee shop.
They might well.
Well, didn't they sort of munch on some sort of algae in space missions?
In space, they're using algae as scrubbers, absolutely. They're doing a lot of microgravity research with algae, working out how it can grow there, because its great utility will be for recycling CO2, potentially also recycling waste, so urine. You can recycle and you use it as a nutrient source. But as far as eating it, I think that may be a little bit further into the future where...
Well, it's just that there's a note here saying that NASA astronauts ate algae in space, but...
They may have eaten it, but whether or not it will be a while before it's a sustainable food source for astronauts.
In dry weight, your research tells me, 1 kilo of algal cells can sell for between $5,000 and $10,000.
Absolutely.
So this could be a big money business.
It is, and these are the high-value products. So these are carotenoids, these are nutraceuticals, this is beta-carotene, this is a colourant called astaxanthin. That's the pigment that turns your salmon pink. At the moment, there's synthetic versions of that, which are petrochemical-based, and what we should be using is natural versions of this pink coloration, astaxanthin, to feed to the salmon to make sure that the flesh is nice and pink. So these are very expensive compounds running in the tens of thousands of dollars a kilo.
As you know, there was a huge international kerfuffle not so long ago about patenting life forms, but yep. Is it possible to copyright algae?
The activities in plant breeding rights with all plants, there is possibilities, but the thing is the genetic engineering of microalgae, Chlamydomonas, the main lab rat, is it's being kept open at the moment so that big industry hasn't had the opportunity to lock up strains. But I think isolation of an interesting microalga, because there's so many, will give us the opportunity for it becoming a product that people can...
I'm not advocating, but I'm just curious to know what the legal status is. Peter, I've read somewhere that someone has built a house entirely powered by algae in Hamburg, of all places.
Yes.
Could we have algae buildings here?
We're trying to right now. The building in Hamburg is fascinating. I visited it 3 years ago. Unfortunately, there was no algae in the panels. They were cleaning the panels when I happened to go there. But it was a fantastic demonstration site. Being a German-produced infrastructure, it was extremely well engineered. It was due to last year to become water neutral. So that means all of the wastewater used within the... It was 16 apartments. There was to be no water leaving the property. It generated enough biomass in the chlorella to then be used in the furnaces to keep the apartments warm in summer. It is a fantastic demonstration site.
Lucy, tell me about the possibility of algae replacing plastic.
Well, algae naturally produce elements that can be used in producing bioplastics. So this is a very, very exciting area. And the news...
You mean our bag from Woolies, if made out of algae, would biodegrade?
Yeah, that's right. So there's many different forms of... There's a scale, I suppose, of bioplastics and biodegradability. But algae and our preliminary research, this is a very... strong theme in our research teams, and we think that there's real possibilities of...
Well, that would save 6 million, or could save 6 million barrels of oil a day.
That's right, and there's a lot of legislation coming through in the international news this week about moves to address single-use plastic across Europe and in America as well. So this is a very, very exciting area where we are hoping to make significant contributions.
Peter, there used to be a magazine called Mode, and every year it elected someone the worst dressed man in Australia. I won it 3 years in a row.
Congratulations.
I was very proud of it. I understand that algae could make my clothes in the future.
I was wondering where you were going with that one. Yes, fibres. So there's potential to make both synthetic fibres and natural fibres. So algae has cellulose in it, which is the building block of cotton. So we could replace cotton. Equally, we could replace a lot of the synthetic fibres, and that's some of the research that we're currently doing.
Isn't this amazing? All this from one of the most primitive life forms.
Exactly. All you need is oil, which is the lipids, carbohydrates, and protein. It's a bag of three elements, and we just manipulate it for the different applications, whether you want to eat it, whether you want to make a plastic out of it, or you want to make a product.
Is there no end to its talent?
Virtually not.
Are you getting a good response from business when you go around and reveal the algae truths, Lucy?
Absolutely. And I think that we're in a phase now where there's definitely a push and a pull. I think that there's increasing consumer awareness, there's increasing business awareness. This is also a viable area of investment. I mean, businesses are looking for return on investment, and there are some incredibly exciting applications in high profit areas. So, yes, we're having some very interesting conversations.
Well, here you are, just across the road at UTS. Are you cutting edge, you know, compared with other outfits around the world?
Absolutely. So there'd be probably five major groupings of algal researchers around the globe, and UTS certainly has the greatest density of molecular engineers, optics, chemical engineers. All of these experts are based at UTS working.
Well, that was one of the things I found exciting about what Tanya Latty's doing at Sydney, because once again, it's multidisciplinary.
Yes.
And all sorts of people are being corralled to interact, and you're doing that next door.
Well, we're working with lawyers, health professionals, engineers.
What, algae have got lawyers?
Yes, the Nagoya Protocol. That's the protection of genetic diversity. And so we're working with lawyers to understand that.
What a delight you both are. I've been talking to Peter Ralph, director of the UTS Climate Change Cluster and founder, yes, of the Deep Green Biotech Hub, and to Dr. Lucy Buxton, Industry Engagement Manager at the UTS Climate Change Cluster. Like to learn more about the green stuff, people will be giving a Vivid Ideas talk about algae on Saturday the 9th of June at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney. You've got to rock along. And that's pretty much a lot for tonight. Tomorrow, beloved listeners, one of my guests will be my old colleague, Kerry O'Brien. Now, why are we dragging Kerry out of semi-retirement? Because what we want to do is get a bit more noise going about the perils of this public broadcaster and all the others around the place, because they're not giving us any money anymore. So Kerry and others from around the planet will be joining me to look at what's the point of public broadcasting. See you then.